This is episode number 674 with the iconic Tony Hawk.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Jim Rohn said that all good men and women must take responsibility to create legacies that will take the next generation to a level we could only imagine. And Tony Hawk has done that for this generation. He is one of the most recognized action sports figures in the world. And according to some marketing surveys, one of the most recognizable athletes of any kind in the United States. He is a pro skateboarder, entrepreneur, New York Times bestselling author, and so much more. His business skills have helped create a Tony Hawk brand that includes a billion-dollar video game franchise. That's right, a billion-dollar franchise. Successful business such as Birdhouse Skateboards, Hawk Clothing, and a film production company. He has done some incredible things, and he's paved the way for so many people. And I'm excited to dive into this. We talk about what Tony has learned about in creating a successful marriage and family and business life, how to navigate big career transitions when old income sources dry up, whether it's more fulfilling to have relevancy or to be innovative in your craft. Also, where his mind goes when it's time to hit a huge performance, a huge trick in front of the entire world, how he stays focused and present, and how to stay committed to your passion when there's no money in sight within the passion. That and so much more. I'm super pumped. All right, guys, I'm excited about this one. This is with the legendary, the iconic Mr. Tony Hawk.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got the legend Tony Hawk in the house. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Very excited about this. We were just chatting offline about how amazing it's been to see your career as a kid watching X Game, watching you do the 900, it was like this monumental moment. And then the video game world blow up for you and just everything continues to blow up.
Oh, well, thank you.
Congrats on everything. And congrats for being an amazing icon for what's possible. I think you are a great symbol. And Rob Dyrdek was just texting me saying how you push the limits constantly and you haven't stopped. And that's what inspired me to want to have you on and interview you, because I'm all about how can we unlock our potential. And as a kid, I remember watching, I never skateboarded because I didn't have the coordination as you on a board. But I remember watching the symbol of what you represented and seeing you break your own fears and your limitations in your mind on the X Games. Mm-hmm. And that was really powerful for me, and I know for a lot of kids, so I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Being a powerful part of my mental development as a child. Cool. and a teenager. Who was the most influential person in your life growing up, would you say?
Oh, that's tricky. I think it sort of evolved with different people as I grew up, but for sure the beginning was my older brother, because he was a surfer. He's 13 years older than me, but he was a surfer, and then he started skating when skating kind of just got going in the mid-late 70s. Yeah. And I took a lot of cues from him just in terms of doing something new, something different. And he gave me my first skateboard, so obviously that was hugely influential to me. And then once I started skating and I really dove into it, he he kind of got out of it. He was in college and doing other, he was a writer. He cared. I mean, he still skated a little bit, but he was just more into a career at that point. And there was no career in skateboarding.
Nothing. It was a thousand people in the U.S. did it, maybe. It's like a hobby
maybe,
or something. Really small.
And only a handful of skate parks. And so when I really got into it, I was looking towards people to emulate. One of them was Steve Caballero because he was my size. He was actually older than me, but he looked a lot younger. And he was flying out of these swimming pools. And when I saw that in a magazine and I saw this guy my size literally flying, that gave me the first fire to be like, how does he do that? I want to learn to do that. And then I went to the skate park and I saw people doing it live and I made it my mission to do that. And then as I started learning moves and things, the person I took cues from them was the skater Eddie Alguera, because he was the most innovative skater as far as I was concerned at a time when skating was kind of really low in popularity and learning new tricks was not cool. It was almost like you're a circus act.
Why not? Why was it not cool?
Because skating was more about the style and the raw power and, you know, looking like you're surfing. And it was this Dogtown and Z-Boys and people who do tricks were considered robots. That was truly it. Like, oh, look at that robot. And I was this little kid. I didn't have the cool style and the big power. And I was like, I want to do that stuff.
The tricks, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that looks awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the first sort of pro-level tricks that I learned was a frontside rock and roll. Because that was Eddie's trick. That was his signature move. Maybe three people could do it. And because I could do it, I couldn't do many other tricks, but because I could do that, they bumped me up classes of competition. And they said, well, he can do frontside rocks, so he belongs in the 3A division.
Wow.
And I didn't know if that was good or bad. It felt bad at the time, because really? Then I was competing against guys who were much better than me.
How old were you then?
11, 12.
Yeah. And you turned pro at 14, is that right?
Yeah, but... You know, that seems like...
You're not making any money as a pro.
You're not making any money. There's no ceremony. You basically check the box for pro in the entry form to the competition instead of amateur. That was it.
That was it. You said, I'm a pro now.
That's it, yeah. I was self-proclaimed professional.
No one said, you're in a pro league now, or are you...
No, it just meant that... It meant that I was competing against other skaters, and I was competing for $100 first place.
Right. And if that you won it. Money, then you're a pro, I guess.
Yeah, so it was 100 for first, 75 for second, and 50 for third.
Crazy. This is the late 80s, is that right?
Early 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah, well, 80. So let's see, 82, 83.
Got it, okay. I was born in 83, so skateboarding was nothing then. It was very small.
Let's put it this way. I'm 14. I started winning a few contests. I had about $600 in the bank. I bought a moped, and that was a big deal.
It was a huge deal.
Huge, because I could get to the skate park on my own.
Wow. And you grew up in San Diego, right?
San Diego, yeah.
And so luckily it was a skate park near you in San Diego.
I got very lucky in that the one park that was near me became the only one that remained in California.
Really?
Yeah. I believe that if I didn't have that facility, I probably wouldn't have been successful or been able to continue skating.
Wow. So a lot of it was where you grew up, having the other influences around you that inspired you. Obviously, you had talent, but if you didn't have the environment, you don't think you'd be where you're at?
I don't know. It would have been a struggle.
Really?
There were some skaters that came from the East Coast during that time that didn't have parks but built their own ramps and would shovel snow off. And I didn't know if I had that kind of commitment to it. Yeah. You know? I mean, I would have loved to have done it, but I don't know if I would have put that much effort into it.
Sure. How do you stay committed to something? Because when, I guess, skateboarding kind of died out for a number of years, before you hit the 900, it was kind of like dead, and then it came back a little bit. How do you stay committed to your passion when there's no money in something?
I did everything I could to make ends meet. It was just sort of making compromises in terms of lifestyle and expense, and also taking any opportunity and just putting myself out there. I was hustling a lot in terms of trying to get random work and things like that, like through the early 90s, mid 90s. Anything that involved skating or like stunt work or even camera work. I mean, like I did camera work on a Frosted Flakes commercial because they wanted someone to ride on a half pipe and follow someone. And I wasn't getting the job of acting, but they knew I had the skill to do that. Editing videos. I mean, at some point I at least had enough editing equipment that I could do projects that were outside of skateboarding. So I did random little businesses, and I was doing it for dirt cheap, but it was paying my mortgage. So that was pretty much it. And then whatever would allow me to skate, and you know, I became the sort of go-to consultant for any skate, any production that needed skating in it.
They would come to you and ask you, like, what looks good, what's the angle, what's the location, all that stuff.
Yeah, basically, I was consulted on a Coke commercial for Japan.
But you weren't you weren't the skater.
They would get. I wasn't, but every once in a while they would need. Suddenly, I just get thrown into it.
Right.
Because we do need another skater. You do it. Then I would start getting residuals, and then.
Amazing. So they would hire someone else, but they probably weren't as good as you, right? The like model.
Sometimes, yeah, but I just, you know, I wasn't the right stunt double type body type. I wasn't Japanese in this case, so.
Got it. Yeah. Was there ever a time when it was a downtime that you thought you were going to give up skateboarding as like a profession or? Hopefully a profession and go do something else.
I kind of did around those years because I wasn't relying just on my skating to pay the bills. I was doing these other things like I told you, and it was trying for sure.
Really?
Yeah, and we had just started a skate company, a skate brand, and I'm trying to support that, and I'm trying to keep that afloat, and with very little success at the time. But it was more, what I learned was that I would do this, the same thing I was doing for free. Do you know what I mean? Like I was getting paid for it. I was getting paid pretty well for it. And then my income, my salaries dropped off significantly, in some cases completely. And I realized that I just loved doing it. I would do it for free any day, you know, and getting paid is just incidental. And then as things came back around, it was suddenly like I'm getting more money than I ever imagined. I mean, even today I get paid ridiculous amounts to ride my skateboard and I would just go do it for free any day.
So that's what made you realize that you would do it for free anyways. You keep pursuing it. Just
and if I'm gonna have to follow a different career to make money, I mean, I understand reality. I understand that at some point maybe skateboarding was not a key to a career, and I'd have to do something. Maybe I went into video editing. I mean, I learned how to use computers very early on, so I would always be the one called for tech support and stuff like that. So I felt like, all right, I have that skill set. I can go pursue that if I want to. But I always knew that even if I did that, I would still find time to skate.
Yeah. What advice would you give to people who have a passion, but maybe they're not able to pursue it on a professional level? Maybe there's not that big of a market for them. Maybe it's in a downturn in their industry, and they feel like they have to go work something else they don't love to make money.
If you're following a passion for a business, you have to go all in, and you have to take that risk just to see it through, to see if it will work. And I think that the thing that people don't realize is that sometimes it takes way longer than you ever imagined. And a lot of times you have to learn different skills and different techniques and nuances that you never would have been interested in or cared about. When I started the skate company, I didn't know anything about marketing. I didn't know anything about purchase orders or displays or retail or wholesale. I just wanted to make skateboards and have a cool team.
Right.
But there were only three of us in the office. So I had to figure out how to do all that stuff. And at some point, I just embraced it. And it definitely was an advantage to me later on because I did understand those things. And when people are talking shop about different brands and stuff, I know what they're discussing and I actually have valuable input.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just want to do the thing they love and not really get out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the advantage and just learn everything about your craft.
That's it, yeah. When skateboarding hit its kind of peak and then you did the 900 and then all this stuff kept rising for you and you kind of rose to fame overnight is what it seemed like from the outside. How did you handle that emotionally or mentally where you had all this news and press and attention, which seemed like overnight?
So what you're speaking of was sort of my second wave of success.
Yeah.
So I had already kind of lived through this first wave of success in the 80s, which was very strange because we were more applauded for our sort of renegade attitude and graphics and hairdos as opposed to our actual physical talent.
Yeah.
And that died off very quickly. And licensing was like, it just meant that you signed a piece of paper and someone had the rights to your name and they just went crazy with it with really bad products.
Mm.
So I kind of learned a lot through that process. And then when it came back around again, I was at least prepared in terms of keeping my integrity and my quality control because I already had made these mistakes in the 80s. But what I wasn't ready for was the amount of attention that skateboarding got and me personally. I never signed up to be rich or famous. I never thought that was an option. No one had gotten that far.
Yeah.
Do you know what it means? A lot of people get into sports, kids get into sports because they can make a career out of it. They can get the $1 million contract. And skateboarding was like, by the time you reach 18, you better find a job. You're out. Like, you're old.
You make all your money in the first 3 years. You know,
there was
years.
No money.
Yeah. Maybe you make $100,000 if there's like 3 or 4 people, maybe, right? Or
not even that. I mean, really? Truly, like when I turned pro, you know, we're competing for $150. Right. No one was making, and if you're over 18, you're trying to pay rent, that just doesn't work. We never aspired to be rich or famous. And so when that stuff came, it was very foreign. You know, when a lot of times people are aspiring to that, they get a taste of it, then they lose their motivation because it's like, oh, I got everything I wanted. Mm. And I never was looking for that. So I was always motivated to keep skating. And I think that's what saved me. A lot of my friends kind of fell off when they had those experiences with success because suddenly they were just caught up in the party and the hype and they weren't skating anymore.
And then you don't hear about them anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And it's over. And so I got lucky in that, if nothing else, that success allowed me to skate more and skate better.
Right. How did you manage the emotions of it all? Like all the attention, all the interviews. I mean, greatest athlete in the USA or the most well-known and all these titles.
I think it was just more learning to treat everyone with respect. And that came from being an impressionable kid and seeing some of my heroes and some of them were jerks.
Really?
Yeah, and that just crushes you as a kid. It's the worst thing that could happen where you meet these guys that you look up to, your heroes, and they're not nice. And they discard you because you can't do anything for them. And I think that through the years, I just learned it from experience. You know what I mean? And also having my own kids and seeing them, how people treat them. And it's just more like, I'm so thankful to be here. I know I'm absolutely, like, this is one of the luckiest things that could have ever happened. And beyond any dream come true. And I don't take it for granted.
Yeah.
And I still don't.
Yeah. Did you feel like you went through a challenging time during that to manage it all, though, or is it kind of?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it was easy to get caught up in the hoopla and
the hype.
Yeah, and also just in terms of being distracted and trying to raise kids. I mean, I had to wrestle with that for years because there were things that I was choosing to do that absolutely were not priorities, but
really
seemed like that's what you do if you're in this scene, if you're on the radar of talk shows and charity, like. These guys want you to go to France for a charity event over the weekend. Why wouldn't you do that? And at some point it was like, well, because it's not necessary.
Yeah.
And it's taking you away from your family. And and you're just doing it because the attention's on you.
Yeah. What type of dad do you want to be?
One that's present, one that leads by example. And I feel like that definitely has shined through in recent years for my kids.
Really?
Where they see me, where I'm, you know, really do. Our schedule's crazy and our kids are all over the place and they're all different ages. And we are there for them in the important times and when they need guidance. Mm.
When you were kind of growing in the fame and building the businesses and launching brands, how did you manage intimate relationships with your partners or... Because you've been married a couple times, then,
yeah.
Right? How do you navigate managing?
They're all different. Yeah. You know, the stresses were different at each time, and the dynamic was different. And they all, you know, I am as much to blame as anyone, but right. They all sort of fell apart for different reasons. But a lot of it was because of my schedule, my fame, and my choices.
Yeah.
And I accept that. And it was wasn't really until recent years that I figured out that I'm comfortable in my own skin and that I don't need to be always doing something or be distracted. And that also, you know, the choices I make and the people I was with, the dynamic wasn't the best for a healthy relationship, yes.
Did you ever feel like you weren't comfortable in your own skin?
I think so, especially once I got a lot of fame and a lot of money, yeah, because I didn't know where I belonged. And like I said, a lot of people... That's what they strive for. And then once they get there, they think, this is where I belong. I should be having all this, the fancy cars and the big houses and be showy about it. And at some point, I was more disappointed that I ever followed that path.
Really?
Yeah.
Disappointed in yourself?
Yeah, for sure.
You thought you were being too showy?
Yeah, it was just like, why do you have to be on MTV Cribs?
Right. I remember that episode. That was pretty
fun. But you know what I mean? Like, it just to show off all the
cars and the house.
The big stuff you bought. Like, yeah, they know you have money. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's like all the bling and all that stuff. None of that stuff matters in the end.
When you see people showing that stuff off, maybe on social media, their cars or their house, do you feel like they shouldn't be? Or do you feel like...
They can do what they want. No, I don't pass judgment on it. I'm just saying in terms of myself, it just wasn't important.
Wasn't important.
I can tell you a lot of times when I see that flash on social media, I can tell that they're doing it beyond their means.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you see certain entertainers, you're like, they're not making that much money.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That stuff's on loan. There's no way that's happening, you know?
It's not Tony Hawk royalties.
But in their world, you got to project that image, and that's what counts. And I accept that.
It's hard to live up to that, though, consistently.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I want to provide for our kids. I'm not trying to blow it all.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you'll ever blow it all.
Yeah. Well, the video game royalties have dried up, but hey, we're working on a new one. So.
Yeah, there you go.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
What's been the biggest lesson in marriage that you've learned while you drive to be, you know, follow your dreams and pursue your career path and your businesses, but also having a healthy, thriving relationship? What's been the biggest lesson or the biggest piece of advice you have for other people who are in that path?
Be supportive and...
She's smiling, yes. She's
like, yeah, and I think also just be open. Talk about the things that are concerning you before they fester.
Yeah.
Don't let them get to the point where they're so big that you can't talk about them. And then there's just the elephant in the room and the tension and the quietness that, you know, that will just kill relationships so fast. And ours is super challenging because, like I said, I have many many obligations. My priorities are our kids. And those things sometimes don't line up because got to go do the thing that makes the money for our family to thrive. But we find time and we work really hard at it. It's work, but it's worth it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there was a time where you didn't communicate well?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I just didn't really understand. When I was a kid, my parents were from the 50s and they were not showing love outwardly. Right. You know, I didn't grow up in a very loving home. It wasn't like they hated each other, but it definitely just...
They didn't show affection.
Not at all. Yeah. And to me, only through their actions, not through their words. And so I didn't really grow up understanding intimacy like that. And I never wanted to really embrace that because I thought it was going to be too hard, or I didn't know.
You thought embracing intimacy would be too hard?
Yeah, or just scary, or I didn't really understand
it is scary.
The process. Yeah, and opening yourself up like that. And it just seemed like I had these sort of ridiculous notions of what marriage and parenting are supposed to be, and you do this and you get childcare and you this and this and this and this is how it works. You know, it was all like Ozzie and Harriet, and it was just such a lie.
Yeah.
And to present, you know what I mean? You would present this falsehood of contentment.
Happy, yeah.
Yeah, it's like fake book, you know? It's like,
yeah.
This is my life. That's not really your life. Those are the cool pictures of your life.
It's like Instagram showing off the car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Right. But that's not the real core of it. And I feel like I've just come to understand and come to terms with the reality of everything and presenting it as real.
Mm-hmm.
I am what you see is what you get.
Right.
You know, I'm not. There's no other facade of fantasy out here.
What's been the biggest challenge you've had to overcome, let's say, in the last 20 years, 15 to 20 years, for you personally, the biggest breakthrough that you've had to overcome?
Honestly, I think it was in recent years, I started losing a lot of my endorsements.
Really?
Just because of like the way that sponsorships work nowadays. It's all more based on your social media, and they're all short-lived. And I was living through by year or multi-year contracts. Mm-hmm. And just by sheer coincidence, all of them sort of ended all at once.
Wow.
And it leaves you with a sense of not knowing your value.
Hmm.
It's hard to explain, but it was like all of a sudden, it was like, well, I haven't changed what I do. I'm not getting worse at what I do. Why is everyone bailing out? And I think that I had to wrestle with, what is my sense of value, and how do I navigate these waters and still do what I love? And I kind of figured it out on my own, but very much like had to believe in myself more than ever.
Wow.
Where I believe that what I'm doing is still relevant and what I'm doing still has resonance, and that people hopefully are still interested in it. And I kind of figured out how to make those, I don't want to say make those ends meet, but fill those voids in terms of finances and in terms of being out there through my use of social media.
Wow.
And suddenly I found myself getting different deals because of what I was doing out there on social media and how I was presenting myself out there. It wasn't just social media, and because I was absolutely skating as hard as ever. And then I just started putting out video parts myself. And that was just a weird notion. It used to be, if you're in a video, it's because your team made a video and you're working towards that video, and it's a group effort, and you present it as the team video. And it was more like, I gotta get busy, get some tricks on video and make a video section and just put it out there. And luckily with technology now, you can.
Right away, yeah.
Right away, yeah.
Do you feel like this, since these sponsors are looking for, you know, social media followers, or they're looking for the younger guys that are coming up in this?
Yeah, and that's not lost on me either. I mean, I know I'm the old skater dude. I'm like the guinea pig for how far you can push this in terms of age. And so that was never a secret to me. But it did feel like all of a sudden, like, why all at once?
Mm.
And it was a lot of it was because our industry was struggling, surf skate industry, the companies, they were all really having hard times. And that was, you know, I was a byproduct of that.
Yeah. Do you feel like you need to chase relevancy still then? Do you feel like if I'm not putting out videos, or if I'm not with these skaters, or with
I think it's more my pride than anything that is in terms of what I think is relevant. So every once in a while, like, I gotta go learn a new trick just because I feel like I'm really still doing it. Not because I want everyone to be like, look, everyone, I did something new. It's just more like,
for you,
I gotta feel good about what I'm doing. And it's not gonna be some groundbreaking new spin or anything, but it's just maybe a little thing that I thought of and figured out how to make my board move differently. And it's like, oh, it's a new trick.
That's cool. And what's the biggest fear for you right now at this stage of your life?
It's mostly just for the peace of mind for our children and giving them the opportunities to chase their dreams and being supportive. And I think it's more that any of them feel slighted in terms of our time or support. That's one of the hardest things to deal with, because like I said, we have kids, we have a couple, we have one in college, one's going to college, two are at home, and they all have different interests, they all have different priorities.
Mm, yeah.
And we want to be equally supportive to all of them.
Of course. How do you raise kids with your fame and the financial success you've had? How do you raise kids to feel like they can go out and do it on their own, or not either living off of your name or what you've built, and they still have the desire to chase their dreams? How do you teach, instill that?
First, by example, absolutely. They've seen that I've sort of built this, whatever it is, this business or this success through my own actions and through my own perseverance and over the years and creativity and whatnot. But I think that they all want to stand out on their own. You know, especially like my oldest son is a pro skater. He definitely had, you know, he's living in my shadow, so to speak, in terms of what's expected of him. And he really found his own.
A lot of pressure.
It is, but he found a way to make it his own. He's a different style of skater. He's more street. He doesn't compete, but he's learned how to be very creative and have his own following and his own style and his own, really his own vibe. And I'm really proud of him for that because I think my success discouraged him initially from skating. And so our other kids, they're excited to pave their own way. I think that's the best way of putting it. They all are motivated to continue their schooling. They're all motivated to find their own niche or career. Yeah. And I'm really proud of how they are hustling for themselves. Yeah. It's funny, you know, like my oldest son, they definitely don't just rely on our money. Like my oldest son, when he's got downtime at home, well, not my oldest, my second oldest, he'll be a DoorDash driver.
Really?
Yeah.
Hustling,
yeah. And it's not hard, but obviously this party is like, well, how much are you really making with that? But at the same time, like, hey, I'm proud of you for working at it. Yeah, like, go do it.
Yeah.
Learn how to be responsible. Mm.
I'm curious about the way you think in the most challenging times during competition. You know, I think of the 900 moment and watching you struggle and fail over and over or not land the trick over and over. And then you have one chance left. You had many moments like that in lots of competitions, I'm assuming, that just weren't captured like that, where the pressure was on, you had to nail the trick or the moment. Where does your mind go in those moments when there is all that pressure to perform at the highest of your ability?
I think the first thing is telling yourself you can do it. That's my only key to true success is having the confidence. So if I'm in that moment and I know I've got to absolutely put it all at risk, I feel capable of doing so. That's one of the first things that you have to, and if you go in with any sense of doubt,
it's not gonna happen.
And whatever the worst case scenario is that you think of, that's what's gonna play out in the end.
Yeah.
So
don't think of the worst case scenario.
Or this is it. This is, if you're ever gonna make this trick, I mean, like exactly with the 900, I have been trying it for years. I've been trying it on
10 years,
ramps.
Right?
Yeah, almost 10 years.
And you never landed it in practice.
No, but you know, I was trying it on backyard ramps. Every once in a while, I'd have my friend shoot video, like today's the day maybe, and I have him shoot video, and I definitely gave him my all. I mean, like I've actually like landed it a couple times, broke my rib on the bottom of the ramp, but I was there. And then when they started having best trick competitions through the year, and so a couple of them I tried 900s, but I don't know, I just didn't, I wasn't feeling it that day or whatever it was. And then when the X Games happened and my spin was, it was more about the ramp. The ramp was ideal for that situation because it was kind of sticky and it was really big. And so it was big for what was big then.
Right.
Now we have—
Now it's small, right?
Yeah, now we have 30-foot ramps. But so I started spinning it and it was consistent and I could spot my landing and it was like, well, if you're ever gonna really make it, this is the time to make it. And so it was the same mindset when I broke my rib. That was the one. I was like, I'm going to make it. This is the one I'm going to make. I'm putting it on the wall. I'm going to commit to it. And I fell forward.
You broke your rib.
Broke my rib, yeah. But I did land.
You landed, it got
so
you.
It was there.
It was close.
It was definitely in the back of my mind. It was like, well, it's there. And so at the X Games, when I finally was committing to it, I was leaning back a little bit to compensate for that broken rib. And if you watch it play out, you'll see that the first couple I land, I was leaning too far back.
Kind of falling on your knees, right?
Or it wasn't. They were always on your knees, but instead of committing to my front leg and falling forward, I was more leaning back and I was shooting out. But
you got to commit all the way to land it.
Well, I had to find the balance between leaning too far forward and leaning too far back.
And how many times did you fall before?
Ultimately, that's what happened. I don't really know. I think it was 10 or 11. But I don't have many more each time I do it. Like I only have generally about 15 or 20 in the bank before I'm exhausted or before I get hurt.
And this was the last moment, the last chance.
Well, not really. I mean, that
it could have gone longer if you had more energy.
No, it was just that the time for the event was already over.
Over, got it, yeah.
So they were just allowing me to keep trying it.
Got it.
And it wasn't like, I didn't think it was going to count for the competition. I just want to get it done.
Right.
And that's the mindset of skating, you know, and it wasn't for the glory. It was just like, I'm going to finally get this trick. I'm finally in the mode. I'm finally can do it. And I never thought that they're going to put it on TV. I never thought that they would let me win after the time had run out, because that's just never how it was. You know, when I learned 720s, which is a double spin, I literally learned on a backyard ramp in Stockholm, Sweden in 1985 with three people watching me.
Mm-hmm.
And no video.
Yeah.
That's what I was used to, you know, in terms of learning new tricks. That's the scenario. So all of a sudden it was broadcast live on ESPN. It was like a SportsCenter highlight. I wasn't ready for any of that, nor did I expect it.
You just wanted to land a trick.
I would start walking through airports at that time, and people would stop me. And Tony Hawk, 900. And I was like, how do you know? Right. Why do you care?
Yeah, it was iconic. Weird. It was iconic. After that moment, when you were still competing, how were you able to work through the pressure of competition without like, oh, I've got to land the bigger trick and the bigger trick?
Well, I always have that in my head. I've got to step it up, or I've got to do my best. So,
do you feel like you were able to thrive under the pressure better with the pressure and the attention, or better without it then?
It all depends.
Yeah.
I got to the point where when I was truly just in competition mode, I would get to the point where I would practice so much that I would have a really difficult routine dialed in, so it just seemed like robotic to me. It was almost boring.
You'd done it so much.
Did
in
so much, yeah. And then I would have a handful of tricks in my back pocket that, if I needed to step it up, I could do a harder trick here, here, here. But generally, it was the same line, same routine. And it wasn't until after that, when in 1999, I always said that was gonna be. I didn't always say, but that year I decided it was going to be my last year of competition. Before the year started. So when I made the 900, it was like, oh.
Now it's just beginning.
Good out.
Oh, it was the out, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. It was like, okay, we end on a high note.
Right.
And you know, I did a couple contests after that, but I knew at the end of the year, like, that was gonna be it. But then it allowed me to start doing exhibitions, and that's when I created the Boom Boom Hakcham Tour, which was skateboarding, motocross, and BMX. And it was our sports as entertainment. And in doing so, I found a new way of skating shows that I hadn't explored before, and that was really exciting. And honestly, those were my best years of skating. Like, I was skating way better in those shows than I was in any competition. Yeah, because I was loose, and even though, yeah, we were doing routines and we didn't want to fall, but if you did fall, you could get up and try again. And the crowd liked that. You can't do that in a competition.
Right.
You know? Generally, you can in a best trick competition to an extent.
Yeah.
But they really liked that aspect. And we were creating really complicated routines of incorporating everyone all together. And it was more like I found this new avenue of performing, and it was a blast.
Wow. Was that kind of like pre-Nitro Circus then, right?
It was, yeah. Yeah, actually, we went to the first live Nitro Circus show.
Really?
And I've actually said this to them, so it's not
sure.
It's not any big shock.
They stole your idea pretty much, yeah.
But, well, no, it wasn't that. It was that we had big halfpipe in the middle of the arena floor. We had a motocross track that went around the outside, jumped over the halfpipe, wow. And then jumped over the halfpipe. And then we had this giant ramp that came in from the ceiling, and then a jump for us to go over the ramp through the middle. And then this 20-foot quarter putt, it was like this, it was about $2 million worth of ramps that filled the floor. We went to the first Nitro Circus show, and it was basically the roll-in and a jump and a landing and an airbag. And they were filling arenas left and right.
Crazy.
And I was like, is that all I had to do?
Yeah, just make a really big jump into the airbag.
Yeah, I was, and every year we'd step it up. Like, okay, we do that. All right, now we have the loop. So I'd have the same company build us a loop.
Oh my gosh.
And the loop is 5 minutes of the show. Because once you see someone going around the loop.
You're like, all right.
Yeah.
Trick's
next.
Over.
Next. Yeah.
It's something different.
Right.
How hard is that, going in the loop?
It
seems almost impossible.
It's funny, it's not. When you do it, what it takes physically is not hard at all. The mindset of not turning, of not hitting a ramp and turning around is so hard to get through. And I see plenty of people who really want to do it and they never can make that turn in terms of understanding that you're riding one track and you're not coming down the same side. You know what I mean? As a ramp skater, your instinct is once you get here, turn around and go back.
Uh-huh.
And so when you finally, right, when you finally determine that it is this sort of carve and it's not a trick, that's when it works.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, one false move and break your pelvis like I did.
Oh my gosh. I'm curious about the video game explosion, because when your games came out, this is what, the 2000s, right? Early 2000s when it kind of came out. Mm-hmm. This kind of took skateboarding, it seemed like, for me, on a whole new level of awareness. Is that right? Around the world?
Yeah, for sure. I think if nothing else, it created a fan base for skating that hadn't existed before in terms of the people that used to love skating, I would say in the 80s, early 90s, were only skaters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one watching from at home thinking like, Cool McTwist.
Yeah. I didn't watch before that.
Yeah,
I was like,
it just wasn't.
Because I didn't skate.
And they didn't understand it. And so I think what our video game allowed them to do was to appreciate the dynamics of skating and the difficulty of it. And then suddenly there was this fan base of people who played our games that suddenly understood trick names and understood locations and got to know some of the figures. And it was crazy. It was crazy how it exploded and suddenly we were thrust into the spotlight and it inspired kids to start skating. That was probably the best byproduct of our video games, is that it really inspired thousands of kids to pick up skateboards and try it for themselves.
Really? Did the industry in general get bigger then? Like clothing and gear?
Absolutely,
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot of those brands as well.
Our Birdhouse brand was definitely the one that was affected the most positively, because up to that point, we were still kind of struggling with the brand and keeping it alive. I'd say from the years 92 to 97 were very trying. And then in 97, it started to turn, and then the game hit and
blew up.
Yeah, blew up.
What's the thing you've still yet to create or achieve that you haven't done yet?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never been able to work on some sort of either TV or movie that truly captures the spirit of skating beyond like Dogtown Z Boys era. And I think that's long overdue.
Mm.
I know Jonah Hill is working on something. I have something in the works that's more of a comedy of sort of an older school group of guys that are trying to skate, you know, ones that were skating in the 80s and whatnot. But I feel like there's room for something in between there that really has a lot of heart. And
a TV series or a movie?
I think a TV series.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Yeah.
Have you seen that new Karate Kid show on YouTube? Have you heard of it?
I heard of it, yeah.
It's like the Karate Kid comeback. Uh-huh. Now they're older and they're like competing against each other.
Okay.
The actors.
Uh-huh.
And maybe there's something that would, like, the old-time skateboarders do, like, a series. I don't know, maybe that's the comedy series.
Yeah, I think that's what I mean. I feel like when you're doing with all the old-school guys, that leans more towards comedy. But I feel like something that does take place within that era that was very sort of experimental in the 90s. But that being said, I am working on a Broadway project with Mark Mothersbaugh that is a reality, where we bought the rights to a Nick Hornby book called Slam, about a teenage skater who, about a teenage pregnancy, but the kid skates.
Wow.
And we want to bring live skating and Mark's music and the story to Broadway.
Wow.
And I feel like that is something really exciting to me, because it feels like something that's very unique and it's going to be a fun challenge. And I mean, for me, it's the dream team. like Mark Mothersbaugh. I've just been a huge Devo fan and all of his soundtrack work through the years. And then I've read all of Nick Hornby's books. So
wow.
It's pretty exciting.
You're already working on that?
We're working on that, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. You've got a new game as well for the...
Yeah, a mobile game I'm working with. I'm working with Maple Media. We're doing a mobile game, skating game.
For the iPhone or Android or...
Both, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be out in October. It's not yet named. I mean, I know what the name is, but they're not announcing it yet.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But it'll be out there. It's pretty cool. I think we've done really well for the limitations of a phone.
Okay, cool. So if we searched Tony Hawk in the App Store in October, we'll find it.
In October, yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Or if we follow you on Instagram, I'm sure you'll be announcing it.
Oh, yes.
You'll be promoting it everywhere.
Absolutely.
What's the question you wish more people would ask you about?
What you've covered in terms of balancing family life, you know, that's something that people don't try to dive into. It's not really the big celebrity type of stuff, but I think it's important. So yeah. I feel like you really covered it. And just in terms of trying to give guidance to others who might be getting into those kind of situations where, you know, at some point you have to really embrace your responsibilities as well as your success.
Yeah. I think the reason I asked that is because there's a lot of driven entrepreneurs or people that are passionate about their career, the businesses that they're creating who listen or their passions. And sometimes we can get caught up too much in the passion and not enough in the connection with family members and, you know.
Yeah, and also just learning to play. That's a huge, important thing that people forget about. They get so caught up in the day-to-day and the kids and the school and the work, and then it's like just, you got to remember to goof around.
Do you goof around a lot?
Yeah, with the kids, for sure, yeah. And
kids probably make you goof around because you got to play with the toys with them. And
yeah, yeah, and we become the go-to house for the VR. So that's been pretty fun.
That's cool.
We like, it's sort of a... sort of a hazing process when people come, like, you got to put on the VR.
Really?
We put you in the scary game.
Oh, man.
Just so we can video their reactions.
How scary is it?
Well, some of them are way too scary, but some are really fun.
Really?
Yeah. And that's another thing I would love to do is make a VR skating game. But at this point, I'm not have any leads on it. And also, it's tricky because if it's a reality-based skating game and you're really skating, it's probably going to cause motion sickness. So,
I'm very motion sick. Like any type of spinning, I get dizzy and nauseous. I went to Disneyland a few years ago with my girlfriend. We went in a simulator. It was the first ride we went on. It was a simulator. I think it was a Star Wars. And I literally started sweating profusely. My whole body was 15 seconds.
Oh, you went to Star Tours.
I think that's what it was. Yeah. I was sitting there. I took the glasses off instantly. It didn't help. It was like I was so gone. I was in the nurse's office for the next 6 hours of the day when it was like so embarrassing. I always want to do rides, but when they go upside down and do crazy stuff, it's like, I'm done. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to train myself to get beyond that.
Yeah. I've sort of had to not force, but strongly suggest my daughter to do that. Yeah. Cause she always is very hesitant about, like, let's just go. Let's go. What if? Like, what if? I'm 50 years old. No, what if's been happening to me?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What's the thing you want more people to know about you that they maybe don't know?
I don't know. I never really think in those sort of lofty terms.
Yeah.
I'm just thankful to be here.
Yeah.
And all this stuff that I've been able to do and experience and people that I get to meet, like, it's beyond any dream. You know, when people say, are you living the dream? Like, I never imagined this dream didn't exist. We're creating the dream.
Mm.
It's insane, and it's super fun. The one thing you might not know about me is I'm tired.
You're tired.
Yeah, because our schedule's insane.
You're nuts. You're going to Detroit right after this. You're traveling all the
time. Yeah, I'm taking a red eye to Detroit to skate there tomorrow. That kind of stuff where people don't, you know, they think it's all glamorous. And
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, you're being like carried through town and being feathered. And it's just like, no.
You're tired.
Getting off of red eye and I'm going to go rent a car and maybe take a nap and then go to the skate event. But
but
that's my choice. I can't complain. Mm-hmm.
It's what affords all these things, yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the thing you're most proud of, would you say?
That managed to raise really stable, fun children through all this chaos and commitments and, you know, the fire of success.
Yeah.
That truly they're grounded and appreciative and that they treat people well.
It's a great quality, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple final questions. This one is something I ask everyone at the end of the show. It's called the three truths. So I want you to imagine that you've achieved everything you want. You've had the relationships, dreams, the kids have grown up and done everything they want to do. And you get to decide when it's your last day. It could be hundreds of years from now. It could be whenever you want it to be.
So
your,
okay.
Your last day here on Earth, right?
Yeah.
You choose. It's a happy moment. But for whatever reason, all the things you've created, you've got to take with you. So you can't really leave anything behind. You've got to take it all with you. But your family gives you a piece of paper and a pen, and they say, will you write down the three things you know to be true? From all your experiences and lessons, the three lessons you would leave behind are truths. Mm-hmm. And this is all we would have physically, tangibly, to be reminded of you, besides our memory. What would you say are your three truths?
Wow. The easy questions last time.
Got to warm you up for
three
it.
Three truths. I think people deserve respect. You have to believe in yourself. And you should help others that can't help themselves.
Mm. Do you feel like you're doing a good job of helping others?
Yeah, through my foundation, I do, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. You work with a lot of kids in your foundation, right?
Yeah, we help provide public skate parks in low-income areas. And so we help people get the resources or jump through all the right hoops for them to get a park built in their area. And we've been doing it for 16 years now and helped to fund almost 600 parks. So I feel really proud of that, of our work there. And I mean, I guess that, you know, that third truth would be somewhere between that and you got to give back.
Yeah. Be of service. Yeah.
Be of service. Yeah.
If someone wants to donate or they want to nominate a location for your foundation, where can they go to support that?
Yeah, TonyHawkFoundation.org. All the info's there. We literally have a guide to public skate parks, getting a public skate park
wow,
in your area.
That's great.
It's not, we try to empower communities that are already trying to help themselves. So we don't just say like, we need a park in X city and we'll go build it and we get all the glory. We want to empower the community so that they feel like they have a sense of ownership and
they
pride.
Take care of it and yeah.
Yeah, and also that they're the ones that did the groundwork for it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're giving them the map in order to get it done.
Yeah. And where can we connect with you personally or online, or where do you hang out with social media platforms?
Tony Hawk on all platforms.
Are you on Instagram mostly or Facebook?
I spread it across. Facebook is weird with all their algorithms. Things kind of get buried,
right?
And it seems to be less traction there unless you want to pay for it.
Right.
And I'm not one to pay for it, so if you find me there, that's great. But I think, yeah, my Instagram is probably my go-to and my stories.
Cool. Insta stories.
Yeah.
All right. We'll check you guys out.
Yeah, because I find myself in absurd situations. And
you're just like, I have to film
crazy.
This.
Yeah. I mean, just like last night, we went to the Spy Who Dumped Me premiere and found myself between Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon with their poster behind them. Like, oh, this is cool. In the shot.
Yeah, right. So we'll check you out there. We'll make sure to follow Tony on all those platforms. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Tony, for being an incredible inspiration to so many people. For me as a kid growing up and watching that one moment in time and then watching everything you've been able to do afterwards, it gives a platform and an opportunity for me to see this is a model that I could live for my life and lots of other people. So,
well, thank you very much.
I just want to acknowledge you for your generosity, your kind heart, and your humility. I think that I love the fact that you say, you know what, I'd be doing this anyways, even if the money wasn't here. I know you have obligations and things you got to show up for, but the fact that you love your art and your craft and your sport that much is truly inspiring. So.
Oh, yeah. I still, selfishly, the fact that we get to build more skate parks, I get more places to skate.
There you go. Exactly. All over the world, but you got to
yeah,
travel.
Exactly.
I love that. This is the final question. It's what is your definition of greatness?
Huh. Pushing boundaries while still being approachable.
That's
my best.
Love it. Tony, thank you, man.
All right,
appreciate
sure.
it
thank
very
you.
Much. Appreciate it, brother.
There you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. Make sure to share it with your friends. Spread the inspiration. The best thing you can do today is to listen and consume and learn something new for yourself and develop your mind, develop your ability to grow, to think differently. And then you've got to spread the message. You've got to share the journey with other people. You've got to share what you're learning about yourself, what you're learning from other people, and share it with your friends. So take a screenshot of this, Tag me on Instagram at Lewis Howes. Tag Tony at Tony Hawk as well. Let us know what part of it you enjoyed the most. Share it on Facebook, Twitter, text a friend, the link. It's lewishowes.com/674. It's all about breaking limitations and creating a legacy. Tony Hawk has done that. Again, every single week, our goal is to bring you the most inspiring individuals in the world to help you unlock your greatness, to bring you wisdom, information, stories, tools, resources to support your life each and every day, to get you clear on the vision for your life, your dreams, your goals, and really the meaning of your life. What is the purpose and the meaning of your life that brings you the ultimate fulfillment? Why are you here? We're answering these questions. We're giving you solutions, and we're hopefully creating the incredible experience for you each and every week. I love you so very much. And as Jim Rome said, all good men and women must take responsibility to create legacies that will take the next generation to a level we could only imagine. Think about that. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.